Hi guys, and welcome back to another True Crime and Makeup Time video. Today's case was requested by CJ, and thank you so much for bringing this case back to my attention. I remember this taking place years ago. I'm sure some of you guys have also heard about this case, but to know that it's still unsolved till this day is just bizarre. A boy goes out for a walk in the woods and disappears. Years go by with no trace of him, and then suddenly he is found in an abandoned cabin, stuck inside the chimney. We're going to be talking about the strange case of Joshua Maddox. Let's get into it. Joshua Vernon Maddox was born on March 9th, 1990, and he lived with his father, Mike, and his two sisters, Kate and Ruth. I believe his parents divorced when he was quite young, and there's not really much mentioned about his mother. They lived in Woodland Park, a town that has around 7,500 people, and it's amongst the beautiful Pike National Forest in Teller County, Colorado. Pike's Peak is one of the most famous sites in Colorado Springs, and it offers a lot of outdoor sightseeing and recreational activities. Joshua, known to his family as Josh, was a carefree, happy guy. He spent a lot of his free time writing or playing the guitar. He was 6 feet tall. He had blonde hair, which he wore long, and he weighed about 150 pounds. He was a good student. He had a few good friends, and he was just a good kid and seemingly happy. Now, I say this because Joshua also had an older brother named Zachary, but Zachary had taken his own life in the year 2006 when Josh was around 16 years old. This happened on 1st June 2006, and it happened a week before Zach's high school graduation, and he was suffering from severe depression. Josh and Zach were extremely close. They were partners in crime. They were always up to no good, always joking and messing around, and Josh really struggled with the fact that he was unaware that his own brother was struggling so badly with depression. Their father, Mike, said that Josh took Zach's death really hard. And I'm sure a lot of us can imagine, or those of us who have been through it, it's an incredibly difficult thing to go through. And it was for Josh and his entire family. Josh looked up to Zachary, and his death was really a big shock for everyone. After Zach's death, Josh kind of became introverted for a while, but he was still trying to live his life to the fullest. Josh was doing okay. He was now happy with his life with his friends. He turned 18 in the year 2008, and his friends said that he had a really good sense of humor. He could sing really well, and he had big plans for his future. He was a really adventurous person. He loved spending time outdoors as he found himself really connected to his surroundings. On May 8th, 2008, Josh is at home and he tells his sister Kate that he's gonna go for a walk. He often went on walks and hikes alone as he loved the outdoors. It was nothing new. And when I looked up this town, right, it's literally a small town and there's just forest everywhere surrounding it. And then there are other neighboring small towns and like forest and parklands. So the house that Josh grew up in was just a short walk from these parklands. There were forested hills and hiking trails, and just around the corner from Josh's house was the site of this old gambling saloon, and it was known as the Thunderhead Ranch. Growing up in this kind of town, you know, with this amazing nature backdrop had quite an effect on Josh. He loved animals and the outdoors. He loved fishing and hiking and camping with his friends. So that day, Josh says goodbye to his sister Kate, and then he went on his way. I'm not sure exactly what time he left, but that same day, it's now turning into night, and Josh still hasn't returned home. This was not usual for Josh, and at this point, his family started to grow concerned. They initially thought that he had just been hanging out with friends and lost track of time. So his family tried reaching out to his friends, neighbors, relatives to just get some information on where Josh might be. They also checked homeless shelters, campgrounds, underpasses, but Josh didn't turn up. I believe they continued searching before they eventually decided to call the police, and they waited quite a few days. They waited 5 days before they contacted the police and reported Josh missing. They just kept hoping that he was just going to return home. And on May 15, 2008, his father, Mike, calls the police and says, "I got up one morning and Josh was there. Then he just never came home. The next day, he still didn't come home. I called his friends. Nobody had seen him. Nobody knows where he is." Now, many people found it really weird that his family waited so long to call the police, you know, 5 days. They possibly wasted crucial time in locating him. But the family had their own reasons, whether we can understand it or not. And Josh had shown no signs of struggles or unhappiness leading up to his disappearance. And his family didn't believe that there was anyone out there that would harm him or had a reason to. His friends all loved him. He had no enemies. His sister Kate hinted at Josh possibly running away, leaving on an adventure. She stated, "Josh was a free spirit and he told us that he was going to have a great adventure and he may not talk to us for a while. When he said a while, we thought maybe a few years." His father Mike stated that the reason why he waited 5 days was he wanted to give Josh time to sort out what he needed to do and return home on his own. When Mike actually called the police to report his son missing, the police were quick to point out that Josh was 18, he was an adult. There were no signs of foul play, no traces of any evidence left behind to suggest something bad had happened, that it was possible that he ran away to start a new life. However, despite these theories that the police had, they did post missing persons flyers about Joshua, about the distinguishing features he had, how he lost the tip of his right index finger in a bicycle accident when he was young. The police also posted on these flyers that Josh could still be grieving the death of his brother Zachary and could be in mental distress. However, the family kept on searching for Josh for months. His friends and family, together with police, searched the neighborhood and surrounding areas. But as time went on, months went by, years went by, his family and friends began losing hope that they would find Josh and find out what happened to him. As the years passed, his sister Kate began thinking about what possibly happened to Josh. I guess hoping what happened to him. She would write to the Woodland Park News. "Since Josh was 18, it has been reasonable to assume he may have decided to leave town to start a new life. As one of his two older sisters, I've always chosen to believe that this was the case. I have expected Josh to return home to my father's house at any time with a wife and small children so that they can meet their grandparents and two aunts. Josh has always been known for his musical and literary talent, so maybe we would find him playing music with a band on tour or catch him writing successful novels under a pen name so that he could keep his preferred lifestyle of solitude in the woods." His father, Mike, had a different idea of what may have happened to Josh. He had hoped he had truly run away, but a part of him considered the possibility that Josh had too committed suicide. This part really broke my heart. So whenever he was in a crowd, he would search their faces, hoping that one of them would be Josh's. There were some articles and statements saying that after Josh's disappearance, his parents had divorced. But then I also found other articles stating that his parents actually divorced when Josh was young. So I don't know if Mike had remarried and then again divorced his wife after Josh's disappearance, but there's some sort of mixed information regarding that. There's no real mention of Josh's mom. So in saying that, Mike, his father, chose to stay in the home that Josh had grown up in, that Josh had left to go on a hike, the house that Josh disappeared from, in the hopes that if Josh was to return one day, it was the only home that he knew. And if he was to come back, he would come back there. It's just so sad. Mike would go on to say that he thinks about Josh every day. He said, "I pray for him every single day. If he's in heaven, I pray he's at peace. If he's here on earth somewhere, I pray he's okay. The pain is so great. I just have to accept it, grieve, and move on. But I want people to remember Josh." His family and friends hoped and prayed that Josh was still alive, but every time they heard on the news that a body was found near Woodland Park, their hearts would just stop. They would brace themselves for the possibility that this body belonged to Josh. And Josh continued to remain a missing person. 7 years later, in 2015, a man named Chuck Murphy, who was 80 years old at the time, was demolishing an old property of his in the area to make way for a new development. Chuck used to be a builder himself, and he had bought this property, which was an old log style cabin, and he bought it back in the 1950s. This cabin used to be the old Thunderhead Ranch on Rampart Range Road. This ranch used to be well known back in the 1930s to the 1950s, and it used to be a drinking, dining, gambling complex, and was owned by a man named Big Bert Bergstrom. He was originally from Sweden, and he came to America in 1912, and he ran this joint after the Prohibition. This place was also used as an illegal gambling and prostitution house. But then Big Bert, he was arrested by the FBI and tried for this prostitution ring, and he was actually found not guilty and released. But after this whole thing took place is when Chuck bought the cabin. After Chuck took ownership, his brother actually lived in the cabin for 30 years. And then in the year 2005, it became a rental property. After that, it became a storage house, and then eventually it was rarely used and then became an abandoned property. It essentially was neglected for over a decade. And at that point in 2015, it wasn't worth repairing. So Chuck was like, let's knock this down and build something new. So in August 2015 is when the demolition of the property began. The cabin sat on this large patch of land surrounded by really tall pine trees. Animals had access to the property from time to time and had been in and out of the property and had essentially become a problem. There was raccoon poop everywhere and the place just smelled horrible. There was no real reason to go inside the property. It was so neglected and just ready for demolition. So Chuck came to his property, the cabin, on August 7, 2015, and he brought a crew to begin demolition. So I'm not sure if everyone knows this, but Jay and I just built a new house, but the house that was previously here, we had to demolish it to build this new house. And when I was thinking of demolition, I was just thinking like a excavator was going to come in here and like break it down. But that's not how it actually happened. There were guys who went inside, dismantled things, took things that were worth saving, etc. So in Chuck's case, it was very similar. He had men go inside the property and they had to like manually dismantle certain things. So the cabin had a chimney, and Chuck brought men with an excavator inside the property to begin dismantling the chimney, and he was one of the two men inside the property as this had begun. To gain access to the chimney, they had to move the large breakfast bar that had been placed against the fireplace out of the way. And as they began dismantling the chimney and as they reached the fireplace, they made a gruesome discovery. There was a body stuck in the chimney. The knees were found above the body, but the legs were dislodged. The torso was found with clothing on and was partially mummified, but the legs were completely skeletonized. The body was upside down in a fetal position with a hand covering the face. Now, because they had been using an excavator to dismantle the upper part of the chimney, Chuck had theorized that the position that they had found the body in could possibly not have been its original position because the movement caused by the excavator could have disturbed the body. The police was called and they brought with them the county coroner who had processed the body. While waiting for the coroner's report, Josh's family was notified about this discovery. With the help of dental records, this body was confirmed to belong to Joshua Maddox. The Maddox family was shocked at this discovery. They couldn't believe that Josh had finally been found. His sister Kate gave a statement saying, "The situation doesn't make any sense at all. We were really expecting him to be anywhere else in the world, and he was actually very close. The only thing we can figure is he was being an 18-year-old kid checking out a cabin. It had already been abandoned for a very long time, and a horrible accident happened. The last 7 years has been really difficult and painful, but given the strange circumstances, it's kind of a miracle that we're having the opportunity now to give him the proper service and burial he deserves. He is not lost anymore. This isn't how we wanted him to come home, but he has come home, and that's important." Now, the wildest thing to me is that the cabin was only 2 blocks away from Joshua's home, yet this cabin had been completely overlooked when they were searching for him. There had been no sign of life, and there was no reason to even check the chimney of this cabin. His family was quite upset by this because they looked everywhere for Josh, but they didn't look in the cabin. It just didn't even come across their radar. Chuck, the owner of the cabin, barely visited the property. And when he did, and I'm guessing they mean after the year 2008, he never noticed a decaying body smell. And to be fair, the property smelled pretty bad as is. Since the cabin was on this large plot of land, the fact that it was surrounded by these tall pine trees, the fact that there were no neighbors nearby, and the fact that the actual cabin was set back from the road 50 feet or 15 meters, even if Josh had screamed while trapped in the chimney, no one would have heard him. So let's talk about Josh's death and the issue with these findings. So the county coroner found no evidence of drugs in Josh's system. He said the heart tissue showed no signs of trauma. There were no broken bones, no knife marks. There were no bullet holes. There is so far no answers to a number of findings. It is very confusing. According to him, it was not a homicide. There was no indication of this. He went on to say that Josh was very tall and skinny, and it appeared that he voluntarily climbed to the top of the chimney and attempted to shimmy himself down. However, at the very bottom of the chimney, there was this wood burning insert, which would have caused Josh to become stuck as he approached it and unable to get out the way he came in or maneuver his way around it. In terms of Josh's actual cause of death, he stated, "It was not an instant death. How he died is only a matter of speculation, but we know he did not starve to death because that takes many weeks. So then you go down the chain and you have dehydration, which can take just a few days. And the other thing would be hypothermia, which could take a day or two. We have no evidence to say which one came first." On 28th September 2015, the county coroner made a ruling of accidental death and the cause of death due to hypothermia, because around that time in May 2008, the temperatures had dropped to the high 20 degrees Fahrenheit, or that's negative 7 degrees Celsius. The demolition of the cabin continued and took place on September 20th, 2015, 2 days after Josh's remains were identified via those dental records. It seemed that the investigators wanted this case to just end, but Chuck was adamant that the investigation into Josh's death continue. Now, some would wonder why Chuck would care, but this was because Chuck claimed that in the year 1990, he had the cabin renovated. And at the top of the chimney from the outside, he had a thick iron mesh grate installed to keep animals out, to keep them from climbing down the chimney and gaining access into the home. He claims it was installed about one row of bricks down inside the chimney. Then during demolition in August, September, 2015, all the metal scraps and metal work from the building, the cabin, were removed and collected, but nobody saw or found this metal grate from the chimney, and it wasn't in any of their photos. The county coroner, his name was Al Bourne, by the way, he didn't want to take any of this into consideration. He was like, "Oh, maybe it rusted away years earlier, or someone had removed it prior to 2008. Chuck did not believe, could not believe that Josh had climbed down the chimney with that steel webbing. He was an older man with years of experience in the building industry, and he knew that metal of that grade was not going to erode in a decade. Now, if you've seen this steel webbing before, if you know what it looks like, what it feels like, it's like this thick metal, like thick poles. And I know this because when we were building our house, the concrete slab, like underneath it, they put rows and rows of this steel webbing to hold the concrete together. And it's hella sturdy. Like, you cannot bend it. You cannot pull it with your hands. Like, I don't even think like the strongest guy could do it. Then when Josh's body was found, he was only wearing a thermal shirt. But what he was wearing wasn't really the issue. It was the fact that his pants, his underwear, his socks were found inside the cabin, folded neatly and placed near the fireplace. So remember when I said that when they were dismantling the chimney, this breakfast bar was blocking the fireplace? Well, the breakfast bar is actually a countertop, you know, like in a kitchen, a countertop. So it had been ripped from the wall and placed in front of the fireplace opening, blocking it. So why would Josh, if he was already inside the property, remove his shoes, his socks, his underwear, his pants, place them neatly folded up by the fireplace, only to leave the cabin, walk around it, climb up the cabin, climb up the chimney, enter the chimney, when he knew that the fireplace was being blocked by the breakfast bar? Then the breakfast bar, the countertop, being ripped off the wall, placed in front of the fireplace, blocking it. Who did this and why? Then the position that Josh's body was found in also didn't make sense. He was found with his legs over his head, which would have meant he entered the chimney head first. No one in their right mind would have done that. And even if the excavator during the demolition had disturbed his body, it didn't have enough room to flip his body head first. So the county coroner, Al Bourne, he reopens the case, but he comes to the same conclusion. The revised autopsy stated the cause of death to be accidental, murder, or undetermined. He said, "We've come up with the most plausible explanation and it will remain an accident. He did come down the chimney. That's our conclusion." So the professional in this case, the county coroner, basically had a theory that this 18-year-old boy was basically an idiot, that Josh had already gained access inside the cabin. He then removed all his clothing except a thermal undershirt, folds all his clothing, places it neatly near this blocked fireplace, walks outside in the cold, climbs up the cabin, gets to the chimney, somehow removes this thick steel rebar mesh that's blocking the chimney, leaves no trace of this mesh anywhere near the property, by the way, and then jumps down the chimney head first, got stuck, and died. A chimney whose exit he knew was being blocked by a large countertop and possibly a heater later. Chuck was not convinced. He stated that Josh's death was no accident. He believed that Josh was either murdered and his body hidden in the chimney, or he was placed in the chimney, trapped, and left there to die. Following Josh's disappearance, the police received many tips over the years suggesting leads and claiming that someone had possibly killed Josh. Rumors had been going around for years, and a suspect was even named who had bragged about killing Josh. This, however, did not come to the media's attention until Josh was found. The problem with these tips, though, was that 7 years had passed, right? And no specific timings or dates could be given. And these were just tips, not information that could be confirmed and tied back to Josh's death. However, this is when Reddit comes through. And although, you know, it can't be used as evidence, it could definitely be used as a lead to investigate further. In 2015, a Reddit user named Genta Mangina commented on a post regarding Josh's death. He stated, "I went to high school with this skinny, dorky, hippie guy named Andy who played guitar in a band. I was never good friends with him or anything. But a year or so after I graduated, one of my good friends, Josh, started hanging out with him and then went missing. Last I heard, Andy was telling another friend, 'Yeah, me and Josh have been spending a lot of time together. We're planning a trip to New Mexico.' Andy's full name was Andrew Richard Newman, and he was from the same school as Joshua and similar age as Joshua. So it was likely that they knew each other or were possibly friends. Andy was described as a skinny musician living a hippie life and played the guitar. Now, this Reddit user, he didn't think anything of Andy until he saw an article about Andy stabbing a man to death in New Mexico in 2009. He went on to explain, "Turns out that in addition to becoming a lot scarier looking, Andy had indeed headed down to New Mexico, where he found himself shooting the shit with the caretaker of a disabled guy and got invited over to their apartment. Caretaker gets in the shower, and when he comes back out, the disabled guy is stabbed to death and Andy's gone. When Andy got arrested, he also claimed to have killed a woman in Taos and stuffed her body in a barrel. The cops had indeed found a woman stuffed in a barrel in Taos, but already had somebody in custody for it and decided to stick with that guy instead. Years later, I found out that the caretaker had died in a bar fight. And without him, the cops didn't have much in the way of evidence somehow. So that case against Andy was dropped too." Andy was known to have mental health issues, and he was identified to be the killer of the disabled man whose name was Anthony Scheider, because Andy left behind some documents of his with his name on it at the scene of the crime. And he allegedly made no attempt to really cover up the crime. So at this point, Andy was hitchhiking and he goes up to this random house to ask for food and water. And the people inside the house were two teenagers. They were the kids of the home and they felt sorry for him. So they let him inside the home and they gave him food and water. But as soon as they let him inside, they called their parents. When the dad came home, Andy tells him that he wants to keep traveling. So the dad offers him a ride into the next county. But as soon as they begin driving, the dad drives Andy directly to the police station. When he was at the police station, the police took his fingerprints and a plethora of hits popped up. He was arrested for Anthony, the disabled man's stabbing in June 2009, and he went through multiple court dates and competency hearings after pleading not guilty to that man's death. Then when the disabled man's caretaker died, the court was really like, well, only eyewitness died, so there's no real way to prove that Andy killed this guy. And this poor guy, this Anthony guy, like, he had no one advocating for him. So the reason why this even links to Josh is because this Redditor, he was bringing up the fact that Josh's friends were completely ignored when the topic of Andy came up. He said, "Several of us went to the cops saying, 'Yo, Josh who went missing was last seen with Andy, who's a murderer. Maybe you should check that out.' Despite a fair amount of pestering, nothing really came out of it. And by nothing, I mean that the police mostly didn't even return our calls and once accidentally canceled the bulletin on Josh because he's alive and well and living in the next town over. He wasn't. In addition to Josh having last been seen with Andy immediately before his stabbing spree, people called in to report having heard rumors that Andy was bragging about having put Josh in a hole." This Redditor never made any further comments, and Andy was never looked into by the police in relation to Josh's death. I believe at this point, Andrew Newman is currently in prison for various other crimes committed, but it's hard to really find more information on him. And that's basically that. I mean, there are several theories on what truly happened to Josh. There were no marks on his body, but suffocation couldn't be ruled out. So there was a possibility that he was suffocated and then possibly stuffed inside the chimney from the fireplace. Some people have claimed that Chuck, the owner of the cabin, is lying about that steel mesh grate, you know, the rebar being installed into the opening of the chimney, because no trace of it was ever found, and they believe he was lying to avoid a wrongful death or possibly negligence lawsuit. There's also a theory that this steel mesh did exist, but it was much thinner than Chuck claims it to be, and it did just erode and wear off over time. This doesn't really make sense to me though, because if you're a property owner, you know, and a builder, you're trying to prevent animals like raccoons and, you know, whatever else from entering the property through the chimney, a thin wire mesh could easily be chewed off or pulled off by animals over time. And it would actually make sense to install something much sturdier, especially if you were a builder, you would have access to better materials. The kitchen bar, counter, breakfast bar being ripped off and placed in front of the fireplace also leads to a foul play theory. There would be no real reason for someone to rip off the breakfast bar and place it in front of the fireplace unless that was the only kind of area in the property to rest this countertop. People theorize it was some dumb kids vandalizing the property, ripping it off and just chucking it in front of the fireplace. But other theories are that it was pretty heavy, a pain to move, so it was strategically placed in front of the fireplace to prevent easy access and thus discovering Josh's body. And that kind of does make sense, right? Like, why would you block the fireplace when there might have been other areas in the home to place this breakfast bar? If people did ever enter the property fooling around, trying to vandalize it, they're not going to sit there and remove this breakfast bar just to look inside the chimney. No one's really going to do that. The most obvious clue to me that this was not an accident committed by Josh himself is the clothing. Why would he take off all his clothes, leave his top on, and then go outside in the freezing weather just to climb down a goddamn chimney? Then the theory that he tried to enter it from the fireplace, from the inside. First of all, the breakfast bar would have been moved for him to even gain access, but why would someone do that? Some people were like, maybe he took off his clothes so that he wouldn't be bulky inside the chimney so he could come down. But why his underwear? Why his socks? You'd feel like you'd want to keep those things on to prevent yourself from getting hurt. I know kids do stupid things sometimes, but come on. Josh seems smart enough to know that even if he wanted to mess around, the chimney is tiny and doing so alone is risky, dangerous. The way his body was found also doesn't lead to the theory that he had climbed into the chimney from the top and got stuck and tried to maneuver his way out, because there was no room for maneuvering inside that chimney. And you'd be able to tell looking down. This whole case is just so extremely strange, and his family really hasn't commented on all these theories about what really happened to him, and I can understand why. How can a coroner basically brush evidence under the rug? You know, slap an accidental death ruling on without answering the most obvious questions. I believe that the truth can still come out. Even though Josh's body has been cremated, someone out there knows the truth. Josh's family lost him without any reason. What do you guys think? Do you believe that Josh did all this by himself and it was just a terrible accident? Let me know down in the comments below, guys. Thank you so much for watching. And I will see you in next week's video. Besitos. Bye.